Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Why do the Nazis treat you as enemies?
Why do the Nazis hate Zeons?
Why? Because without us, to hate would be nothing to hold them together. So the party has built us into a threat, a disease to be wiped out.
Is Zeon a threat to them?
Where did you come from? Our warlike period ended dozens of generations ago. We came here, we thought we were civilizing the Ecosians.
It would seem the assumption was premature.
Were they like this when you first came here?
Warlike, yes, but not vicious. That started when the Nazi movement began. It was only a few years ago.
That would coincide with the time of John Gill's arrival.
When they've destroyed us here, they will attack our planet. They'll use the technology we gave them. The danger is that taking life is so repugnant to our people, I'm afraid we'll go down without a struggle. But after what I saw on the street today, I think I could kill.
Every time I see this episode, I've always forgotten how delightfully gay it is.
It's a really lighthearted yeah. Nazi type episode. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is lighthearted.
They're dressing up as Nazis all fun.
A Nazi.
I'm talking about, we'll get to the pronunciation, Shatner's pronunciation of Nazi in a bit.
He's always got great ones.
But this is a very gay,
sabotage.
Gay episode, at least with regard.
There's a lot of shirt off business.
To Kirk and Spock getting all sweaty and whipped and naked and climbing on top of each other. And Kirk is saying all sorts of hilarious, like, oof, ooh, Spock, oof.
Yeah.
I love it. It was great.
Were you noticing Leonard Nimoy's body hair, his chest hair, and
his dense
green blood,
his lush chest bush, or I don't know what the term. What is the term kids use?
I don't know.
These days?
I don't know if
young
chest
people.
Chest
I think everyone shaves now or something.
The forest.
No, they don't even know what it is anymore.
Scrub.
They used to be the forest.
This conversation's making me uncomfortable.
Why?
That sounds yucky.
That's the words you're using.
Leonard Nimoy is a...
No, but it's not Leonard Nimoy is the problem. Fellow. I'm the one who brought him up. It's like the words you're choosing to use right now.
What,
the lush forest?
Like,
well, you brought up the chest hair business.
Yeah, but I didn't start talking to as about a lush forest. Ugh, that's disgusting. Don't say that stuff.
There's always a line that gets crossed for Dan. It's like, that's just too...
This is the game we'll play. When does the line cross for Dan? See, that's more entertaining because it's when I do something as opposed to when I don't do something.
Oh, you're referring to the quite possibly off-air conversation
Dan never sneezes.
Dan never sneezes. Oh. Jesse was proposing we do a game where we see how often Dan doesn't sneeze.
Yeah.
Dan, understandably, and I got to be with Dan on this, has some sort of foundational issues with the concept of that game, some sort of logical and structural issues.
What happens if I do sneeze?
Then I'll be proven wrong.
I guess you're right. You will be proven wrong.
Then you win, motherfucker. That's what happened.
Because I have these, you know, we haven't done a sound game in a while, but for a while,
we should do more
I was
sound
doing
game.
One where yeah. I was like, I can't remember what it was exactly, but I wasn't telling you guys to name a part of a sound. I wasn't like, what I was doing is playing a small part of a sound. You had to name the whole sound. And then I thought it'd be a good idea to do the opposite, where I like played a small bit and I asked you to tell me which part of that sound wasn't like that.
Okay,
Patrick
responded, yeah, so like there's infinite answers to this question.
Right, I remember this game.
I forgot about that, but now I recognize.
Yeah, and I remember being like, you're right, that made a lot more sense when I was thinking about it in my head, but it fell on my head and it was just a bunch of gobbledygook.
But it was a hilarious moment.
It was. And
if you listen to classic podcasts of It's Got Star Trek.
And classic. As is typical on those classic and these contemporary episodes, we're off to a rocky start.
I'd say it's a rocking start.
A rocking start.
Oh,
no,
man.
It's the Nazi business. It's all this Nazi business. We've been just dealing with
Nazi
business, like week after week, or fascism, Nazis, oppressive, what have you.
Nazi Germany. This young lady is a Nazi.
Nazi.
You should make a very convincing Nazi.
Yeah.
This episode.
There were good jokes like
this. This episode. Yeah.
This young lady is a Nazi.
I think is a good transition. Next week, we'll do something goofy and fun. In fact, we'll tell you right now. We'll give you a heads up. We're going to do Enterprise. Wow. We're going to do Star Trek Enterprise acquisition when they kind of sort of meet the Ferengi.
Snack.
Quite correct.
Yeah. And that's a big goofy episode. We're going to have, that'll be fun. And this episode is a nice transition because it does deal with Nazis and with heavy topics.
But, obviously.
Yeah, but it is also at least...
It's a little silly.
It's kind of silly and lighthearted.
The 60s approach to the Nazis is just to make them be silly.
And it's also sort of tonally weird because they're making all these kind of like goofy jokes.
But, fascinating.
But then they have... very poignant analogies, not even analogies, just like real examples of and references to genocide.
Yeah, right.
Analogs to the Holocaust, very clear analogs to the Holocaust.
It was brutal.
We don't see much of it, but it is told to us, and we see emotion on the people's faces when they're talking about dealing with this stuff. Mm. So, tonally an interesting episode.
I see.
Yes. All of that is all well and good. We're not going to play Dan Doesn't Sneeze game. Mm. We're not going to play Jesse Does Sneeze game. We're just going to assume it's going to happen.
But what about we're going to play
it's
the
not
game,
a game
where when will Dan feel the line has been crossed?
Yeah, that game we're still playing.
We're always playing. Man.
Right now the score is like 1-0.
Who gets one?
I don't know, but the line has been the line has been crossed once, according to you, Dan, and you're the
it's hard to.
You're the sole adjudicator.
Figure out the score
of this.
You realize that the aim will, of course, be very crude.
As perhaps will this podcast episode, because as a reminder, I know it was not too long ago, Dan said the line was crossed when I referred to Leonard Nimoy's thick,
lush forest of chest hair.
Lush as a lush forest that you could
fatal error.
Sort of run your fingers through.
Perverted.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
That was brutal. Perverted.
Indeed.
He's a poet.
All right, let's do our normal beginning business.
Oh, yeah, we haven't started yet.
Begin 'em ups.
So the begin 'em ups.
This might have been our longest cold open that we've done ever.
Nah.
Or teaser, as Patrick likes to call it.
Yeah. Whatever nomenclature you
squeeze
prefer.
It.
Flomenclature.
Hello and welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
This is the time of destiny.
Yes. You've arrived
right,
at the correct podcast, if indeed you're trying to listen to the It's Got Star Trek
Prepare
podcast.
A subcutaneous transponder in the event we can't use our communicators. Insert the transponder, Doctor.
All right.
That was weird, wasn't it?
It was okay. That was a little weird, wasn't it, Jesse?
It's because I was talking about like we're getting started. Insert the transponder. We're getting started.
Okay, Jesse. Little sidebar. What the fuck is that guy talking about?
You know, insert the transponder. We're ready to go to do the thing.
You know, we do advertise Dan as this sort of sound genius, and he was famous for just cleverly inserting the exact right sound clip at the moment of highest impact and highest hilarity. Every now and then, I question his choices. That might be a function of my lack of genius, though.
You. You.
Okay. All right.
You.
So,
you.
It's
you.
Got Star Trek.
The two Utes.
The It's Got Star Trek podcast. We've done that. The episode we're discussing, if you haven't guessed already, is Star Trek, the original series, Patterns of Force.
What a maximum orbit.
Okay, there you go. There's another one.
No, because this is the episode we're doing, Plot and Orbit, to the episode. We're about to orbit around this episode as we talk about it for the podcast. I mean, it's perfectly clear to me.
All right. No, that's totally
we're
fine.
Orbiting around this topic, this episode. And so it's like, we're going to do this episode. All right, let's do it. Plot your orbit. Plot a max orbit. What is a max orbit? I guess that's as far as they can orbit without flying away.
I presume maximum orbit would be the highest orbit. I don't know if that quite makes sense. But anyway, that's not important.
What blazes is this?
There you go. Okay, Star Trek. It's got Star Trek. Oh, this is It's Got Star Trek, episode number 280.
All right, good.
That's right.
Death to Zeon.
I'm sorry. Okay. Episode 280, It's Got Star Trek, Patterns of Force. Here we go. Before we get to the episode... we do have an email, and we have an announcement. The announcement is...
Yes.
Announcement. Yes.
The announcement is that last week, last Sunday, I had
the pleasure of joining the Trek Cast.
I thought
podcast.
He was going to say pleasure too. Yeah.
I never say pleasure. That's
I had it in my head. It was going
to
happen.
Anyway, so I got to join the Trek Cast podcast for a discussion about this current state of Star Trek. So it was kind of a debate. We did it on YouTube. It's available in podcast form and YouTube.
Most
form.
Interesting.
Check out Trek Cast. And enjoy that. It was a really fun conversation. And we were also joined by Matt from Pod Wraiths, which is a DS9 podcast. It was a delight to get
that
to
sounds like a,
participate in that conversation.
Like awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go check it out. It was fun.
I see.
Good. All right. So then we also have an email.
Email.
I was able to gather the meaning.
from our old friend Steve.
Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
And this is referring to last week's episode in which we discussed TNG's The Drumhead. And
interesting.
So, I didn't discuss that.
Well, yeah, Jesse wasn't here. But feel free to chime in as you like, Jesse.
Oh, yes.
Steve says, loved your discussion of The Drumhead last week. I remember thinking when it first aired that the character of Simon Tarsis seemed to be at least slightly coded as a closeted homosexual. Hmm. The whole story, as you mentioned, was clearly intended to allude to the McCarthy hearings, and a big part of that was the so-called Pink Scare, where homosexuals in the government were hunted down as security risks. I wonder if there was a subtle effort to slip that subtext into the story at a time when even Trek was not really ready to tackle it outright. And Steve's email goes on to make a number of very interesting points on the same topic. And also, Steve notes that he found an interview with the actor who played Simon Tarsis, who said he viewed it as an analogy to being infected with HIV in that time period, you know, sort of because the character of Simon Tarsis had, quote unquote, tainted blood because of his Romulan heritage.
Fascinating.
And I thought that was a very interesting perspective, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was like a little bit of that going on there. One thing we forgot to mention last week is that episode was directed by Jonathan Frakes. And, Jonathan Frakes, we know from that, even in that period, was interested in elevating these types of stories, similar to what he wanted to do in The Outcast when there was that episode dealing with the, was it non-binary, I guess,
people? Right.
Quite correct.
I forget which terminology they used back then. Very interesting point, Steve. Thanks for bringing it up. And
thanks, Agamus!
Definitely, folks, go check out last week's conversation. It's a little crazy because Jesse wasn't there to, you know, Jesse's normally scolding Dan and I, and he's shaking his finger at us. You guys can't see this, but he sort of helps keep us in line.
So, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Tapping on things, come on.
Jesse was out
clicking on pens.
Clicking pens.
Opening up some hard candy.
Clickety-clack.
Well, yeah.
Crinkle, crinkle.
Actually, it's no joke that when Jesse starts like wiggling around and stuff, it's sort of usually an indication that he's bored.
Right. So
it's an indicator. Like Dan and I can determine, oh, we're not being clever enough.
Sometimes I just start
enough.
Making noises. And
yeah. Sometimes
the girl is drunk.
Sometimes Jesse just falls asleep.
Oh, yeah, that's that. Yeah. Actually, there's a lot of those. There's a lot of podcasts.
Go back and listen to all the previous episodes.
You'll notice towards the end, there's no Jesse.
Mark down the ones where like Jesse sort of just disappeared. We haven't kicked him out. He just went to sleep.
Should have let me shoot him.
But yeah, Jesse was sick last week, so he didn't get to participate in that conversation. Any thoughts on the Drumhead, Jesse, real quick, before we continue on to our main conversation tonight?
No, that's cool.
All right. Okay.
Let's move on.
All right.
So what have we accomplished?
All right. So if you all would like to send us an email, anybody else?
I hope not.
You can write us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. That's feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
I don't know, Bones.
And you can send us a voicemail at itsgotstartrek.com/record.
Yeah, it's cool. Do it.
Cool. All right.
It seemed the assumption was premature.
And then if you get a review, you get a haiku.
Oh, yes, that's right. If you
haiku.
Yes.
If you write a review, let us know, and then Dan will write you a haiku. It's
been Hail victory!
Based on your name or something.
It will.
Based on your username. Yeah, but that doesn't mean that the content of your review itself might not have something to do with the haiku, but it's first and foremost based on the username, but it may or may not include part of your actual review as well. But
this guy's the thing to remember is poet,
the thing to remember is the username.
All right. Dan is an
a very
artist.
High level, this motherfucker.
He's an artist, and he has an artist's mind.
Do not joke with me, Zeon P.
Not jokingly.
I don't know, Dan, you're freaking me out with this propaganda you're playing.
I'm not jokingly.
All right.
Nancy.
So,
Hail the Führer. We've got so many Zeons, we've got to dump them outside.
That line was like one of the more subtly fucked up lines.
Yeah, no, that was super fucked up.
I mean, it's
up.
Not that subtle, like...
We've got so many Zeons, we've got to dump them outside.
It's not that it's subtle so much that when I think about it more, it continues to get more fucked up.
Well, I mean, particularly when, I mean, let's state the obvious here. The marginalized group in this particular instance is named the Zeons, which is clearly meant to be an analogy to... Zion, Mr. Sneezy.
That was. We'll note that wasn't.
We're not editing that out.
That was not Dan that sneezed.
So the audience, doesn't know how often we're editing out sneezes from Jesse and somebody.
That girl is drunk.
That was only one so far.
That was only one. That was actually an oddly low number of sneezes for Jesse. Usually,
I'm trying to control myself.
All right.
That was brutal.
Not
perverted.
The focus of the podcast.
Anyway, back at the ranch, Zion is clearly an analogy for Zion, which is a hill in Jerusalem, but is often associated with either the city of Jerusalem or Israel, just the entire region or country of Israel. So clearly they're making a direct analogy here. Sort of Holocaust type analogy.
Holograms?
Yeah.
That took me a second. Holograms?
Holograms?
You know.
Holograms.
Holograms.
Okay. So, this episode.
Unclever, these Earthmen, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, let's start at the beginning.
Because at the beginning.
The premise, which it takes a little while
the
for
Ekosians.
Us to...
The Ekosians are the warlike, primitive ones, and the Zeons are the future nice people.
The Zeons...
like a crazy interplanetary nuclear missile or something.
Yeah, okay. So you guys are just saying shit. let's say...
I was starting at the beginning.
Apparently violence was abhorred by Zeons, but didn't the Ekosians like steal their powerful weapon? Why do they have a powerful weapon if they abhor... Okay, you're right. I'm skipping ahead. Let's go back.
Yeah,
and let me drift like that.
Start at the very.
You know, you're putting it on me. It's your fault. You didn't hit me hard enough. Okay, Zeons are people from Jerusalem. All right.
Yes.
The Ekosians.
They all look
from. They're from Echos, which is like echoing history. TOS is very on the nose. They're always very super obvious.
Sure about that?
Well, apparently the other thing was very...
I buy it.
They got super lucky that when they ended up going down to this planet, that this planet had sort of blue-collar 1960s outfits.
Yeah.
That's what they decided to put on.
Right.
Spock had like a moth-eaten sweater.
He already had that from that other episode.
Spock goes, the Ekosians are humanoid, so there's apt to be a similarity in architecture.
Yeah, like, that's convenient.
One doesn't really necessitate the other. In any way, TNG did not follow that logic whatsoever.
And they just looked like regular humans.
It's like they're human.
Oh, by the way, Dan, TOS did not follow that logic for the most part either.
Right.
This is clearly an episode where they're like, well, we want them to look like Nazis, so let's use the German set.
Nazi.
They're always giving Spock some beanie to cover up his ears. Yeah. Except for
Or a helmet.
Except for the movie, but I feel like in the episodes, like there's been another episode.
In the movie, he wore a headband.
Yeah, but in The City on the Edge of Forever, wasn't he wearing a beanie in that one too?
Yeah.
I like Spock.
I mean, do they call that a beanie?
It's like this. It's like the same beanie from that. He has it. He saved it up.
Is beanie the correct term? I just call it a wool cap.
I think a beanie is what you call it.
I believe you.
That's like the new school term. It's like
I'm not like
it's
a like hat person.
It's some sort of old school longshoreman sort of hat.
The first time I heard the term beanie, it was like in a comic book where it like a hat with a little helicopter propeller on top.
I know the beanie. Calvin and Hobbes.
But then I learned down the road that beanie also just means like one of them wool cap type things.
Yeah.
It's like what's it called? Balaclava is an instrument. Balaclava.
Baklava.
Baklava. Balaclava. I got baklava on my I've got baklava on my balaclava that I wrapped.
Spanish opener.
I got baklava on my balaclava that I wrapped around my balaika.
Babushka.
I got baklava on my balakova. I got baklava on my balalaika. I got baklava on my balakova.
What are you talking about?
How do you say balalaika?
He lost it.
How do you say the mask thing?
I don't know what you're talking. Do you have like a point?
Balaclava. I got some baklava on my balaclava.
I got some baklava on my balaclava wrapped around my balalaika.
That was it. You did it.
All right. Are you good?
I got my baklava on my balalaika. I got my baklava around my balaclava wrapped around my balalaika. I've got my baklava on my balaclava, which is wrapped around my balalaika.
Jesus. All right. Now, I know that you...
That was brutal. I've heard it.
I know that that was sort of one of them stream of consciousness attacks that you
had. It was also like a tick. It was like a...
No fucking joke! It was a tick.
But you know, I just wanted to get it out. Like in one clear, out in one clear, non-interrupted sequence that I got perfectly.
We understand.
So
that.
a lot of things had to come together. There was a lot of moving parts in that, namely, one long stream that I also was able to get correctly
out.
I
saw that shit move.
Okay, now I do believe nestled in there towards the beginning was some actual point about this episode about the hat.
Speech follows no logical pattern. Random sentences strung together.
Random sentences.
Oh, yeah, I was talking about balaclava because... Oh, he has beanies, and we're talking about Spock always has beanies.
Oh, I forgot, it had nothing to do with this episode.
And we were talking about humanoids in TOS on this episode. Apparently, they're humanoids, so their architecture is just like ours. Yeah,
humanoids.
And then...
they're total exact... They just look like regular humans.
Void the noid.
Not even weird noses or anything.
The Ecosians are like the Nazi people. The Zeons are our future smart people. Here.
Okay.
There was a lot of chopping going on in this episode. We can talk about
that's neither here nor there.
What
would be nice 20
but
minutes
chopping
in
the... and or maybe one.
Are you trying to say Chopin?
There was like one. There was one chop and a bunch of neck pinches and like another hit.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot
of
neck pinches.
There was at least a couple neck pinches.
They were pinching them Nazis up.
Yeah, Kirk did his own version of the Vulcan neck pinch at the beginning, against the SS officer. Except it wasn't a neck pinch. Do you see when Kirk did that? He did that. Neck chop? You remember when he did the neck chop?
I remember the neck chop.
And the dude fell the same way a dude would fall if he got neck pinched, where he just kind of falls over.
Hey,
he just kind of faints.
Hey, Dan, do you know what this is?
It's some kind of thing that I probably heard before, I'm sure.
It's Chopin.
It's chopping.
Chopping.
Talking about all the chopping.
Chopin list. Chopin list. But then, just like...
Oh, I get it. Like you, like a shopping list.
Yeah, exactly. And then, just like in City on the Edge of Forever, there was like it was Spock and Kirk working together, doing some ruse, and then while the guy's not looking, while they're double rusing him, he like neck pinches the guy. So Spock neck pinched the dude, and then when they were in prison, like I think Kirk like distracted the guard while Spock like snuck up and neck pinched him again.
Is this one of Dan's classic lists?
Well, it's a short list. So far,
you should advertise it as a list, though.
Okay,
one reason why I mentioned
it's a chopping list.
One reason why I mentioned that, might as well bring it up here.
Chopping and pinching.
I don't dare.
Ripping in the Tarrant. One reason why
I hope not.
One reason why I bring it up here is because, as I noted earlier, this is episode 280 of the It's Got Star Trek show.
I don't know, Bones.
We are heading, barreling towards 300.
Oh,
And it's often on the hundreds that we make some tweaks to the format. And I was thinking, I was like, I'm making a list of like sort of like little things we might want to do starting in episode 300.
Dan never snoozes.
I'm going to add that to the list tonight. But, or at least the Dan crossing the line game with Dan. That's a fun
All audio. Units are to return to base. Fire.
That's a good audience interaction one. No, but Dan's lists, I think, are one of those, you know, I want to like really stress the regular component, like an advertised, because I want to add some more structure to the show by having some regular components, or at least, you know, semi-regular. I think Dan's lists, they've been an ad hoc thing up to now, but they are so integral to, I think, a good episode. I'm not saying a Dan's list necessarily makes for a good episode of It's Got Star Trek, but I am saying that every good episode of It's Got Star Trek, I pronounced that weird, sorry, but every good episode of It's Got Star Trek has a Dan list in it, I bet.
Thank you, Doctor.
Yeah. It's true.
Indeed.
It's true.
Indeed. Yes. Anyway. Obviously. Quite correct.
Well, I appreciate the vote of confidence for my list.
And I apologize for interrupting that list.
Sometimes I don't know when I bust in with a list
I always like the list. Right. Well, it is sometimes aggravating when you're like, oh, I forgot I have a list of 28 points.
Well,
at the end, you do it at the end of the episode. And you're like, don't worry, I can do it quickly.
But I zip right through.
I got one more.
I mean, you zip right through
sometimes.
But it might be a little stressful because it just gives you that tension of not knowing whether I'll be able to get through it. Well, anyway, I've mostly gotten through it, but just to recap. tap. At the beginning, Kirk did a neck chop against an SS officer, and the dude fell just as if he had been neck pinched, meaning he just kind of collapsed.
Yeah.
That was number one. Number two, Spock and Kirk worked together just like they did in, or similar to how they did in Sitting on the Edge of Forever, and Spock neck pinches the dude, and he falls down. Then later when they're in prison, Kirk distracts a guard, Spock neck pinches him again, he falls down. Then later when they're the camera crew, that goofy-ass camera crew with all the Nazi cameras everywhere, that was like a Three Stooges routine or something.
We'll get to that.
So Kirk asked for them to pose for the camera, and Spock neck pinches the dude there. So that's like three of them. But then while Spock is
is that three neck pinches or that's chops?
Four, that's
or,
four.
Or are you combining?
I'm sorry,
them?
The list is four. That's four things in the list. Three neck pinches specifically.
Three neck pinches and one chop.
But check it out. While Spock is neck pinching that one dude that they're posing with on the camera, it's like Isaac or something. It's not Isaac. It's like Isaac.
So
as Spock is neck pinching the guy, Isaac is he chokes another dude out with an arm. And it's a really weak choke, but like that dude when he chokes,
just fucking collapses.
It's the same thing with Kirk's chop and Spock's neck pinches. The way Isaac chokes the dude, he just collapses. All those, whether it's a chop or a neck pinch or a choker chopper pinch.
You're starting to lose it, buddy.
A choker chopper pinch.
Is this a mazurka?
A choker chopper pinch.
This is a chopping waltz.
It's a waltz.
A choker chopper. A choker chopper. A choker chopper pinch.
Because it goes in.
Whether it's a choker chopper pinch, they all collapse like it was the same.
Okay.
Choker chopper pinch.
Choker chopper pinch. All right. Great. And that's the end of the list. Are there any other lists that we can expect in this episode?
No, there wasn't much to list.
All right.
That was the end.
That was a pretty good one.
Hail victory! Hail victory! Hail victory!
How about this? Before we take our first break.
Oh, no.
At least let's get to the premise of the episode.
Oh, we should probably do that.
Because we're having one of them jump around nights.
Yeah.
We're having one let's of them hit
jump,
it.
Jump around nights.
Jump, 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 jump around.
Jump around.
Where was I? Oh, yes. The premise of the episode is very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's the idea that a Federation observer, an anthropologist of some sort, presumably. I guess he's a historian in this context. We'll not talk about why they didn't send an anthropologist. By TNG, they figured out to send the anthropologist, but they didn't figure out how to make an adequate or holographic field, holographic blind.
This fellow was like a
sabotage,
an instructor at the academy, I guess, because Kirk had him as a teacher,
and he also referred to him as professor, which is it's two different ranks.
And then Spock said this weird thing about how like his approach to history was about like what did he say?
He
says
Spock's favorite thing. Now keep in mind, this was like Spock's favorite thing about John Gill is that he treats history as causes and motivations instead of dates and events.
Right? Isn't that what history is?
Yeah, but I'm saying I feel like it was a commentary on like our system of like education or something.
Maybe that's how Vulcans just learn history, like a bunch of events.
I think it was a criticism of how we learn history because we're taught history as dates and events, but when the dates and events are not as important.
Well,
the dates and events are not as important as what caused them and why people did it. You know what I'm saying? Because if you focus on just the dates and events, you're not taking into account that like shit could happen again. I know, but the thing is, I think it's a commentary saying that how we're taught it. We're taught it's like in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. You know,
like
that
in
kind of
elementary school, you're taught it that way. But then, like, if you actually like study history in college, then it's.
I mean, I can't say how they thought about shit back then like that, but my assumption is that Gene Roddenberry or whoever wrote this. I don't know who wrote it, but whoever wrote this.
It just sounded silly to me.
Yeah, I know. I'm bringing it up. Yeah, no, it did sound silly. And
may I briefly interject?
Well, almost there. All right. Did sound silly, but it did sound silly. I agree with you, Jesse. All I could think was perhaps whoever wrote this felt like people focused on dates when they should have been focusing more on like the meaning behind them. And you're saying that you're right. That is what history is supposed to be.
But back in the 60s,
that's why I think it was a criticism, not on history. It was a criticism on our approach, like the mass approach to history.
Dan, I give you credit for giving the writer credit More credit than I did, because I just assumed the writer had, previous to writing this episode, had in the not too distant past read an introductory college history book where somebody was like, history is not a series of
yeah, I mean, that's probably right too.
To me, it sort of feels like somebody who learned a new concept, right, reframed their thinking of the world, and was so excited to tell somebody about it,
yeah,
that they introduced it into a conversation. I think this is the Hollywood writer's
version
of that. Now that's just a guess. However,
blew their mind.
Not to belabor the point, it is now.
It's like when first year like econ majors, I remember they like worship the supply and demand curve. They're like, this is the god of economics.
No, and then the second year ones are like, man, we were so silly. Okay, no, I don't want to belabor any of these points because it is time to take a break.
True. So, I shall reconsider.
We're going to take a break, and then when we return, we will continue our discussion of Patterns of Force.
Smell you later.
Go now. We must do the rest.
You may take him now for interrogation.
Okay, we have returned.
All right, pigs. On your feet, pig.
There's a lot of pig talk in this episode.
You know what is really weird, Dan?
I promise you that pig will never get up again. One of the pigs struck him before he dropped.
I was just about to say there was a lot of pig talk in this episode. Yeah, like, no joke.
That's weird.
Like, do not joke with me, Zeon pig.
Not joking.
That's funny. We both did it.
It's interesting that you don't consider that a pig list.
A pig list? A piglet?
Yeah, no, a pig list.
Pig-list. Hammer on my piglet.
Because you had a previous list that was the chopping list.
Yeah.
And this is just a series of phrases.
Were, you know that, yeah, because the first...
qualifies as a Dan list and what's not
okay,
a list?
Okay, well, if it needs to be written down...
And I don't mean to ask that aggressively. I'm honestly curious sort of what your criteria are, or if you've even sort of delineated these criteria internally. Maybe you haven't. Maybe it's
okay. It's pretty straightforward.
Instinctual thing.
If I have to write it down, it's a list. If it's just a series of sounds, then I don't consider that a list. Because, like, for example, the chopping, I had to describe what was happening. He chopped him there. He neck pinched him there. He choked him. He's a choking, choppy, pincher.
Chocolate, cherry, chocolate chips.
Choking, choppy pincher.
Are you doing?
Okay, but I'm sorry. I got stuck.
You're involved in this shit?
I got stuck. I'm sorry.
What's wrong with you, man?
So, oh no. No.
You.
What's with all this chopping business?
Gentlemen, we've just been through one civil war. Let's not start another.
Okay, all right. Fair point.
So, okay, and then this one was just of times they said pig. There's also, if you want to, so we can call them lists. In that case, how about the list of...
No, I'm not trying to be pushing any external categorization on you. You know how uncomfortable I am with the human tendency to, not only to categorize, but then to invent... created categories and then think that those categories are real as opposed to just helpful little tools for organizing the world.
Agreed.
You know?
Agreed.
So I'm not trying to make you come up, I'm not trying to force my categorization scheme up and over your categorization.
You were just trying to get it clarified.
Yes, like butter.
I see.
Like what?
Like butter.
Clarified.
Not butthole. There's no such thing as clarified butthole.
I didn't say butthole.
There could be.
Did I say butthole? I almost said butthole. You knew I was going to say butthole, but I never got through it. I never got through the whole word.
You never got through the butthole.
You never got through the whole word.
The whole word.
I get it. That's not childish at all. That's really...
You don't get it.
It's actually really clever.
I don't get it.
Anybody who thinks it's childish, listen closer. Super clever.
Super duper clever.
This is irrelevant.
There's another, then we'll have another sound list. This actually applies to later in the episode. We can get to it later.
Okay.
It's all the mean things that Melikon. All the mean things Melikon said to Spock.
Melikon.
He said this.
Note the sinister eyes and the malformed ears. Note the low forehead denoting stupidity.
I like this. Wait, that one.
Note the low forehead denoting stupidity.
Oh, no.
The dull look of a trapped animal. Mm-hmm. Definitely an inferior race.
The whole time Spock's just like doing his eyebrow raise thing. But it's so funny because he couldn't be more incorrect.
They enjoy having Spock endure being called stupid.
Yeah.
Because in City on the Edge of Forever, it was the same thing. There was a couple, we've seen a few examples. Oh, no, it was the It was the Guardian of Time.
Yeah.
It was all calling Spock like unsophisticated.
Oh, right. Totally, yeah.
Yeah.
And Spock was raising his eyebrow in the same way.
Yeah, but also it's kind of it is interesting though, because it's like they couldn't be more incorrect, you know? And it's just a sort of accentuating the fact that they're just like, oh, they're different. Yeah. That must mean they're stupid. When in actuality, like Vulcan, that Spock is like way like, you know, smarter and stronger and more badass than any of those guys, you know?
Yeah.
Like objectively so. I'm not just saying in terms of I'm not saying in terms of opinions.
Forest.
I'm not talking about in terms of their viewpoints. I'm just saying like how they although am I accidentally like saying Spock is part of a superior race?
Yeah, that's why I was laughing. Yeah, okay. Dan looked at me concerned because I had like a queer look on my face. And it was because Dan was all like, he is biologically intellectually superior.
Yeah, unwittingly like
his genetic makeup is obviously better than these people.
I was unwittingly breaking my own point. Is that a thing to say? You break your point? If you're not making your point, if you're not making your point, are you?
You're breaking it.
If you're not making your point, are you breaking it? Is that
you're not going to be part of the problem? You're going to be
Dan,
part of the
solution.
Your science knowledge is obviously primitive.
Don't worry, Dan. I think you've successfully distracted people from your previous racial supremacy. Your accidental racial supremacy.
This guy reminded everybody.
No, it's always complicated when it comes to sci-fi and Star Trek and stuff like that. Because, look, yes, Star Trek in many ways, in different ways throughout time, throughout its existence, the existence of the franchise has been progressive, nominally progressive. However, that does not mean that plenty of the writers, even up until and including today, sometimes have odd, outdated, or simply incorrect understandings of the world. And hence we have, as we've talked about many times before, entire planets where the Ferengi are all basically the same and the Klingons are all basically the same until we finally get some stories that add some more nuance.
Just to be clear, I don't think that being stronger means you're a superior form of being, just like I don't think being smarter means you're that either. And actually, what does it even mean to be smarter than someone else? Does that even make sense? It doesn't even make sense.
I don't even know what they're
talking
about.
So you're clear. I don't fucking care.
Again, unfortunately, as I mentioned last week, we're not currently a YouTube podcast. Perhaps we ought to be though, because the audience,
fatal error.
The audience is missing out. The audience is missing out on Dan's body language, which is very perplexing. it looks somewhat sarcastic. I gotta say,
but I don't think
it means it that way.
I wasn't sarcastic. I meant it.
You're sort of like squishing your body together like a dying beetle, twitching about.
Think positively, Spock.
Yeah, indeed I do. All right.
Dude ID.
So, before the break, we were trying to get through the premise. The premise is, guy shows up, he's meant to observe these people for the Federation from a... Again, he's a historian, but it's really an anthropological type activity.
Shit was getting fucked up, so he decided to take cues from the Nazis.
At some point... Like he knew it was a warlike people when they got there.
But they
like,
made
they
good roads.
So yes, this guy made that classic blunder, which we've seen many times.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, he took it to the extreme of sort of ascribing, you know, people, we see this a lot, and I understand the presumed justification, the idea being that if you're being intellectually honest, you should be able to have nuance in your judgments of all manner of people, systems, governments, etc.
People's places, things.
In that good or evil, whatever you want to call it, that these are very black and white terms, and reality is generally much more nuanced.
Those silly old Nazis.
That's a point taken. Okay. However, it's a different thing to say that the Nazis developed some interesting logistics tools when it comes to... transportation and some other industrial processes, including some very evil industrial processes that utilized in the Holocaust. Yes, you can make that point. However, this is sort of like the extreme version of that, which is there's violent people. I've encountered people who are so violent that... The way to solve them being violent
is to make them
into fucking Nazis. Because he says at the end, he's like the most efficient government.
Right.
Now, that's just wrong. I think the episode is kind of it's taking a viewpoint, which is, I think, an outdated viewpoint, which was that Nazi organizing principles were somehow like really great for industrialization. What's really great for industrialization is when you have a massive population and you have, not necessarily within your own country, but nearby, you have access to good resources. And they had access to the sea and shipping and things like that. Mm-hmm. So plenty of advantages that aided the rise of Nazism.
Nazi.
Still... we're not going to critique that too much because, reality of this, because again, this is Star Trek. This is TOS. The point is not the specifics. The point is getting the opportunity. There's two main opportunities they wanted to tell here. The opportunity to critique the idea, that an autocratic system can be used for good, because, and they make that point very clearly.
It's just a crazy idea.
Explicate it very clearly at the end. So that's the one point they wanted to make, one goal they wanted to accomplish with this episode. And the other goal was showing William Shatner in a Gestapo uniform.
Yes.
And make lots of comments about William Shatner looking hot in a Gestapo uniform. And Spock thinking he makes for a passable Nazi.
Oh yeah, it was
you should make a very convincing Nazi.
Yeah. I also like,
and then Kirk gave this funny like sitcom look, like meh, meh.
I also like their lashings that look like the painted on lashings. Yeah. Like, yeah. And I like that the nice touch, you know, Kirk's was red and Spock's is green.
Yeah.
It just looks so corny.
There's no joke.
It looked like really bad, like corny blood. like blood that they were doing. For his SS uniform. Sorry guys, it happened.
Would you like some wood?
Replacing wood? Dan's understudy is taking over this week. It's the Beaver from Lady and the Tramp.
What kind of monsters are the Zeons sending against us?
There was that character, and like he was like, he's always the Beaver, like in the Robin Hood.
Yeah, I just said the Beaver and Lady and the Tramp.
Okay. And he was saying, "Got any wood?" Which was like something that Joey Gladstone,
right,
aka Dave Coulier, said from Full House. Okay, so when Kirk and Spock and Esoc were in the utility room checking shit out right before Kirk carried Esoc out past the guards, you know, when Kirk was like, "Oh, we got so many of them.
So many.
We've got so many Zeons, we've got to dump them outside."
So right there, the SS, if you look at, and I don't know if it was just the angle, I don't think it was, but right before, when they were in that utility room before they went out, if you look at the SS on his uniform's neck section, it looked thin. The SS, the actual letters, they looked thin and drawn on and kind of lopsided, okay? But then when they went to go meet Abram, and every time after that, the SS looked really thick and robust. You see what I'm saying? Like it looked, they looked
say
like
that again, thick and robust.
Like the letters looked like full letters, but when they were in the utility room before, and if you look at it, they looked like they were penciled.
Right.
They were penciled on with like a white pencil. You know? It could have just been the angle, but I swear, look at that.
They had the wardrobe.
Look at the utility. Look at the utility room, and then look at like later in the episode afterwards. You'll see the SS looks like it's different.
Do you use the terms thick and robust on your Grindr profile?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I do.
Good.
And it's about
his, username.
It's about my butt cheeks.
You do.
My butt cheeks are thick and robust. I feel like
you crossed a line, Dan. You crossed my lines.
I crossed your lines.
You crossed all my lines.
But
spelled like Alan Thicke.
So maybe they filmed that utility room scene afterwards at the very end. By then, like
they lost the pin.
They gave their shit back to wardrobe
or they gave the pin out as a fun little souvenir.
Well, I don't think it was a pin. It was written.
Was it a pin? I thought the SS on the collar was a pin.
Was it a pin?
I thought it was a pin.
Maybe that's why it looked different.
Was it a patch? Jesse votes for patch. I vote for pin.
Maybe that's
patch
why.
Patch or pin, Dan?
Maybe that's why.
Hey, you've got duty or no duty. Jesse and I just invented patch or pin.
I thought it was written on or sewn on or patch, something like
so
that.
So you got a fucking totally other choice. Can you come up with a name that starts with a P to stick with the alliteration? Patch or pin. Patch, pin, or pattern?
Pencil.
Patch, pin, or pencil. Patch, pin, or pen. patch, pin, or pen.
Patch, pin, or pen.
All right, new game.
Pattern.
All right, audience.
Chokey chop pincher. Pinchy, chokey chop.
So here's the deal. Audience, you can pause. We can't pause. We're in the midst of recording.
Uptown on the Flaming Jam.
We can't pause. This is just, this keeps going. This is the deal. But you all at home.
That is my order, Major.
You all can pause. So you can pause right now and play a quick game of patch.
That's pawsome.
Patch, pin, or pen?
Patch, pin, or pen?
Patch, pin, or pen?
Patch, pin, or pen? My name, hey, dude, nice to meet you. My name is Patch, pin, or pen? My name's Patch Pinnerpin,
hey,
and I'm
Patch
so happy. I'm so happy to meet you. You know what the best thing about meeting you is? Is that you get to meet me, Patch Pinnerpin.
You get the fuck out of here, Patch Pinnerpin. Fuck you.
He's created a little tableau. Patch Pinnerpin has entered some sort of establishment, and he's aggravating.
The girl is drunk.
He's aggravating the shopkeeper, played by Jesse, who's clearly had a history with this guy because. He knows his name.
You guys, bad news.
Patch Pinnerpin, get the fuck out of here.
Sabotage. Nazi. Sabotage.
Get to the Nazi thing in a bit. Patch Pinnerpin, you can write us a feedback. Pause the episode. Go check it out.
Patch Pinnerpin.
And see if it's a patch, pin, or pen. And write us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com or social media at @itsgotstartrek at all the fun social media places.
Subject line, Patch Pinnerpin.
Yeah. No, Patch Pin. Patch, comma, pin, comma,
no,
pen.
Patch, we, space, pin, or pen.
No. We are a podcast that uses the Oxford comma.
No, I'm saying...
I'm an Oxford comma
kind
of guy.
No, I'm saying patch at first word, second word, right. Pin or pen.
I'm not going to accept that. If you send that to the... If the feedback at discussstartrek.com, I'm going to ignore that subject line. You can say... Dan,
I'll write that.
Are you saying comma before
Dan,
or?
Do you want to give out your personal email address?
No, I will check the email.
You can send the email to...
And the subject line, patch, pin, or pen.
Okay.
I use an Oxford comma too, but that doesn't apply to this situation. It's irrelevant.
I get it. I'm glad you pointed that out.
Because I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Where are you talking about using a comma?
Because I don't know.
Before or?
What?
Yes.
What?
Before or.
Yeah. And.
Okay. Because I would not necessarily use a comma if I say or. Just like
if there's two items, if there's two items,
if there's
three,
if there's two.
I'm pro Oxford comma because the lack of the comma can lead to confusion because you can connect the clauses incorrectly. It creates ambiguity.
You gotta tell them what happened.
Ambiguity in the targets of the clauses.
Right.
Which is why would you want to fucking do that to your language? Create.
You'll have
ambiguity.
To make a determination.
It's already enough fucking ambiguity
in
English
the times.
To begin with. You know, it's crazy, insane,
crazy.
Gentlemen, we've just been through one civil war. Let's not start another.
Indeed. So.
So buttons
back at the ranch. So this fellow shows up at this planet and decides to make everybody Nazis.
Yeah,
it is a little ridiculous that he's not just saying, "Oh, let me cherry pick some key elements from."
I need the imagery and
industrialized nationalism. No, I'm going to just call them Nazis with fucking swastikas. Yeah. Like, because that's the only way it works. There's a magic spell to Nazism. It doesn't work if you don't have a fucking swastika.
Exactly.
And fucking Armani.
Works
or
like a charm.
Hugo Boss fucking SS and Gestapo uniforms.
Not this as much as I dare do.
It was funny, though.
Patch Pinnerpin.
It was funny, the casting in this episode, because they've got everybody dressed up as Nazis, or at least all the Nazis are dressed up as Nazis. And some of the not-Nazis are also dressed up as Nazis, but that's neither
true.
Here nor there. That's just part of the plot. But of the people who are dressed as Nazis, who are supposed to be Nazis, what's kind of funny is most of them aren't very Nazi-ish. Mm. The girl is Nazi-ish.
But she's not a Nazi.
But she's not a Nazi, exactly.
Not a Nazi.
Daras.
Yes.
Daras is not a Nazi.
And
she's like the non-Nazi version of what's her name from Last Crusade. What was her name? Like Helga or something?
Something like that. She was a Nazi.
Yeah.
But she pretended, was totally a Nazi.
She pretended not to be a Nazi. She was an Austrian Nazi who slept with both Indiana Jones
and
his father.
Dad. Yeah. Gross.
That's yucky.
That is pretty yucky.
Is it?
I mean, it's... Wait, what have you done that?
No.
You're like, is it weird?
I will say.
Really? Elsa. It's Elsa.
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 Like the Disney movie.
Are you asking him if he slept with Indiana Jones and Indiana Jones?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Boy. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
I'll note Dan didn't say that crossed any lines yet. So we know where Dan's lines aren't.
So what have we accomplished?
Well, not much yet. So anyway, the point I was making is a lot of these Nazis don't look like very Nazi-ish. And I'm curious if they did that on purpose or maybe it was
incidental. They don't sound like Nazis.
Well, okay, which I liked that fact. Because I thought it would be even more silly and ridiculous if all the Nazis were blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know, that prototypical Nazi, which we do see in the Voyager's The Killing Game, and we do see in Enterprise's Stormfront that they do, because they're trying to hire actual period specific German Ubermensch type people, right?
Betty Grable.
Yes, precisely.
Betty Grable came Betty around Grable. That corner. What part of her would you be staring at?
Betty Grable.
Her gams.
Yeah, right. Weird.
I thought it was interesting.
Rita Hayworth.
That you had these sort of
Veronica Lake,
round Nazis and dumpy Nazis and swarthy Nazis. Because
it is a different planet.
Yeah, it's ultimately a different planet, and
they're like Gremlins too. They have different kinds of Nazis. Is that what you're saying? You got the swarthy Nazi like and like the
there's the one with the British accent.
You got like electro Nazi.
Yeah, electro Nazi. Spider Nazi.
You got Nazi that looks like a girl.
Isn't there a spider Nazi in Wolfenstein 3D?
Yeah, probably.
Or is that Doom? I don't know.
I don't remember.
It's like Dr. Mitten Spider.
Yeah. But partly where it works for this story is if they're trying to make the point that Nazism is problematic irrespective of the people who are conducting it, let's say, then I think that helps make that point because these are not necessarily the people you'd expect. It would have been made stronger if they had also cast people of color, right? Which we know that they have on the regular cast, and Star Trek didn't shy away from casting. So it was kind of interesting that it was mostly a bunch of white people. Now it might be some Italian white people, you know, that it was not necessarily all, you know, Germanic people, but I thought an interesting choice or happenstance that played into the plot of the episode in a nice way.
Yeah.
You had nothing to say to that.
I thought that was a very eloquent point about it.
Sometimes I make my points too eloquently.
And then you said everything there is to say.
It just fucking stops the conversation.
Sums it all up.
We're supposed to be entertaining.
So what was John Gill was a cultural observer, right? That's what you said.
He seemed to be like a history professor. Everyone kept talking about him writing history books.
Right.
But the act, as I said before, the act was really more of what you would expect from an anthropologist, possibly a sociologist.
Right. Yeah, those guys are extra shifty.
But in this context of disguising yourself and observing an alien culture, that would be the role, certainly, of a traditional style anthropologist.
You know, a lot of this episode was difficult to get sounds for because they were in a cave for part of it. There was a lot of like background noise going on in half this episode.
You ever been in a cave?
Caves are awesome.
Yeah, I've been. What are you talking about, like Luray Caverns or whatever?
Well, there's all manner of caves.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, like, you know, stuff like that is what you're talking about in your personal experience.
I also like being in sort of castle dungeon type situations.
Castle Dungeonstein.
Yeah.
Castlevania Dungeonstein.
Or the crypt of a cathedral. Cathedral crypts are pretty bad.
I went to the one at Canterbury Cathedral.
Cathedrals are pretty badass all around.
Cathedrals are amazing feats of architecture and unfortunately often also extremely exploitative labor, but beautiful, beautiful products at the end of it. Right?
Yeah.
Because you can have exploitative labor going towards some bullshit. Most of it does go towards some bullshit, but cathedrals are pretty.
They're achievements of man.
Not that it justifies the exploitation.
So the Zeons.
Dr. Zeus?
The Zeons.
Neon Zeon.
Neon Demon.
So Spock goes, why do the Nazis hate Zeons? And Isak goes, why? Because without us to hate, there'd be nothing to hold them together. So the party has built us into a threat, a disease to be wiped out. It's like, that's
one of the main points of the episode.
Yeah, that was it was like near the beginning. And then Isak says, where did you come from? Our warlike period ended dozens of generations ago. We came here, we thought we were civilizing the Ecosians.
Yeah.
Now, I kind of have a little bit of a problem with them saying that because it seems like they were also. It seems like the Zeons were also planning to treat the Ecosians like shit.
Yeah.
Whereas the Ecosians were trying to enslave the Zeons were like basically proselytizing to them and trying to culturally absorb them in a way or something.
We don't have enough details to know precisely what mechanism they were going to or they were utilizing in their attempt to civilize these people. Even the most benign version of it, though, is not necessarily that benign. It's still interfering with the culture. And again, the highest level moral of this story is the Prime Directive. They don't call it that, but
they call it the something
non-interference directive or something like that.
It doesn't apply to the Zeons.
The thing, it doesn't. Yes, but it's the episode is making the argument that it ought to just be that's everyone's thing should be like no matter how beneficial you think you're being. Because John Gill, as hilariously misguided as it was, he's arguing that he thought it was for the benefit of these people.
Old Gil.
And, the Zaons no doubt said the exact same thing, that they set up their colony with the thought that they were going to somehow influence them into being better people.
Now, it seemed like it almost, they didn't really imply a lot to this.
Classic blunder.
But it almost seemed...
A fatal error.
It almost seemed like they were saying, though, that John Gill's plan was kind of working at first, and it was just Melikon came along and fucked it up for everybody.
That is the primary flaw in this episode, is that in an effort...
A fatal error.
And I don't think they're doing it to keep open the argument that aspects of fascist National Socialism... in the Nazi sense, in the German Teutonic sense, I don't think that they were purposely trying to keep some hooks open to that argument that you can utilize aspects of those philosophies in a beneficial way. But they do, right? That's putting everything on Malarkey Man.
Melikon. Malarkey Man. He is Malarkey Man.
By putting everything on this character who we barely see in the episode. He's basically introduced towards the end.
Yeah, I know. He's like the big, big, what do they call him? The bad boo.
No, you're right. The Hollywood term is bad boo.
Bad boo.
That's the script writing term.
It's called the heavy. Isn't he the heavy?
I don't know. The heavy.
Is more like a shooty guy.
The guard at the beginning who was all torturing them. I think he's the heavy.
But isn't the heavy also like a main dude? Or is the heavy just like,
I don't know.
He's like the bad boo.
He's the bad boo. Yeah, you had it right the first time.
But he doesn't get introduced till later, right? And, like you said,
and
just now.
In an effort, he was introduced to solve some plot problems, right? Because they wanted to give an out to John Gill, right? They wanted to have John Gill be stupid enough to cause the problem, but not be so immoral as to have continued it or be the cause of the actual genocide bits of it, right? They didn't want to do that to that particular character for the story they were trying to tell. So ipso facto, had to introduce some other mechanism, and they decided, probably for simplicity's sake, to say, an eager up-and-comer, a power-hungry dude, came along and said, I'm going to take over and somehow use the hating on these people. Maybe he had a personal grudge against them. We don't know. Fucking know why this guy hated on the
silly, because you can, any type of... You just need an authoritarian government to have like what they're going for, which is just like some sort of top down enforcement to like make things. That's what they mean when they say efficiency, right? They just mean like shit happens because like that's like they tell you to do
right.
it. Like,
yeah, it didn't really sort of ask
you can,
the
you
means.
Can do any sort of authoritarian whatever the fuck. Like it doesn't have to be the fucking Nazis. It could be any old, you know.
And they implied it strongly, but they didn't state it explicitly. That the reason he picked National Socialism was specifically because of its nationalistic tendencies as a unifying mechanism, right? As a social unification mechanism, you create national identity, and a shortcut to creating national identity is to stir up fears against another and then target that other as a way to say, we're all the same, they are all different. And then we're going to go murder those.
Maybe this came a couple decades too late, but they're lucky they didn't get blacklisted for socialist messages, right, in this episode? Because they're saying,
actually, it was less than 10 years after.
Less than 10 years. Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty close to the McCarthy period.
How Germany, like, so, you know, they're all awesome. And it's making no mention of the means to which, like you just kind of alluded to, Jesse, how they don't really make mention to the means of what kind of shit has to go on to get to like the level of
TV got better after they stopped all the McCarthy shit.
Yeah, it got a lot better. We do need to take a break in a second. Do you have any point that you can make in 20 seconds?
Near the end, when they pulled the screen and you saw John Gill's mouth, and they were like, all hail Fuhrer. Gill was like, Ecosians, this job ahead is difficult. It requires courage and dedication, ... And then Kurt goes, watch his mouth. But if you look at his mouth, it's hidden by the microphone. Yeah. Was that the joke, or was that the point? Or were they, it just didn't make sense to me that they said, watch his mouth, and his mouth
was he
covered.
A puppet?
Was Kurt pointing out that his...
Somebody realized at some point, they're like, oh, if he's all drugged up, how are they convincing people? It's like, just put a microphone in front of him.
So it's just, we can't figure out how to convince him, so we'll just put a microphone so we don't have to.
Microphone, bone.
Neck bone.
All right. How about this? We will take a quick break.
What does neck bone mean?
Huh? Well, we'll tell you.
Neck bone. That means
I'll tell you.
Isn't that like psych? But where did it come from?
We'll tell you at the break. Okay. We'll be, when we we get back from the break, we will conclude our discussion of patterns of force. Be right back.
All units are to return to base.
All your base are belong to us.
Oh, can I get my button ready?
Is my butt
get
ready?
Get your butt ready.
No.
It's going. It's going.
The butt's not ready. The time, the clock started. We're back. We're back. We're back.
All right, pigs. On your feet, pig.
A lot of that drumming action going on. Pig so butt. Where is the origin of neck bone? Neck bone means like psych, or I'm just playing.
Yeah.
But where does it come from?
I don't know. Is that...
Why don't you go ask...
Isn't that
is
what
it,
we...
Is Patrick, it a local colloquialism?
Well, you, that's what you
it's
said.
Not
we
were local.
Gonna, that's local colloquial?
I don't know. There's is local, it, I learned it from Jesse.
Local colloquial? Local colloquial? Local colloquial?
This is a day to remember, Major. This is a day to remember, Major. This is a day to remember, Major. This is a day to remember, Major.
Local colloquial? Local colloquial?
This is a day to remember, Major.
Local colloquial? Local colloquial?
This is a day to remember, Major. This is a day to remember, Major.
Local cloaca, local cloaca, local colloquial cloaca. Local cloaca, local local colloquial cloaca. Local what is it? Local colloquial, local colloquial cloaca. Local colloquial cloaca. Local colloquial cloaca. Local colloquial cloaca. Oh, this is what you do when I'm spinning. When I start spinning as you do this.
I don't know what you're talking about.
This is a day to remember, Major.
This is just some chopping. Gotta love that chopping. All right.
This is a day to remember, Major. This is a day to remember, Major.
Local cloaca. Do you have any other sound clips that go with that sound clip? Because usually you have like a couple.
I haven't had many beats lately.
Yeah.
It's like, it's interesting because I've actually.
You think that's a function of the audio or is it a function of your failing brain?
A little from column A, a little from column B. No, it's a good question because I just haven't like. They haven't like popped into my brain as much, so I don't know if I'm paying less attention or if it just hasn't lent itself. I also haven't had
maybe
many.
Maybe getting old.
But you know what? I also haven't had many sound effects lately either. Usually, I have a ton of sound effects, or at least a good amount, and I don't.
Did you get burnt out doing Section 31 because you had to like, record a clip of every single thing because they were all
yikes
notable?
Yeah, I know. It was exhausting doing that. It really was.
It seemed like
because like for such a bad movie, there was a lot of ridiculous sounds to like grab from it.
Yeah, because you kept insisting about how there was so much to cover.
There was.
Movie. Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing, but like...
According to AI Overview from Google, the phrase neck bone simply refers to the bones located in the neck of an animal, like a cow or pig, and is a straightforward description with no complex historical origin.
Okay. It goes to show you...
It's a neck bone. It's
an the part that says no complex historical...
Self-contained neck bone.
The part, that says no, wait, the part that says no complex historical origin is like highlighted in blue. Like, that's like, there is nothing interesting about this phrase.
There's nothing happening.
You've been neck boned.
I know. Google AI neck boned me.
All right. So, for those in the audience, especially those in our international audience, where this might be
a
particularly obscure
the definition of neck bone,
English colloquialism, neck bone, at least in the.
Wait. Key points about neck bone. Number one, literal meaning, the bones in the neck of an animal, specifically the cervical vertebrae. Number two, culinary usage. In cooking, neck bones are often used to make bone broth due to the flavor they impart. Number three, no hidden meaning. Unlike some other phrases with neck, like neck and neck, neck bone has no figurative or idiomatic interpretation beyond its literal meaning.
It sounds like it's trying to.
That's it.
It's
hiding with me.
No, it's hiding something.
I know.
That's where the
It's hiding. Okay. Okay. Just to clarify. Growing up, our usage of the term neck bone in the Mid-Atlantic area here in Washington D.C. and surrounds area, we talk about Bamas, and we say neck bone. And our general use of neck bone, although it could vary somewhat, was sort of like if you made you look kind of thing, you'd be all like, hey, look at that, and somebody would look and you'd be all like, neck bone. You know, or if somebody was distracted by something that was silly to be distracted by. That's
there's Bobo too. Things are Bobo.
Yeah, Bobo, Bama, neck bone.
Mm-hmm. Your luncheon when you're going out of control, your luncheon.
Yeah.
Speaking of cultural idiosyncrasies,
Wouldn't it be interesting if there was no such thing as the half bath, aka the powder room? You know, where a lot of houses, houses at the front door, like directly by the front door, there's like just a toilet and a sink in a bathroom.
When you started the sentence, I thought it was going to be some sort of a critique on National Socialism.
That's a common.
Oh no, I was
architectural feature.
Yeah, it wasn't going to be, but it's going somewhere.
Okay. Is it going
right? But just
his parents' house.
Yeah, right. Where it's just the toilet and the sink in a room with no shower or anything like that. Yeah. Wouldn't it be interesting if culturally that wasn't a thing, and then culturally there were only full baths. So instead of the front door being a half bathroom, there's a full bathroom with a shower, and it was encouraged that
they have walls?
And it was encouraged that guests take showers in the front bathroom next to the front door.
Oh, right.
Wouldn't that be weird?
So your question, you have two questions. One question is what if, and the other question is. Wouldn't that be weird?
Wouldn't it be weird?
Right. Wouldn't that be cool and weird?
As to the latter question, yes. As to the former question, I'm not sure how to answer that.
You know, it's like if that was a cultural, just think about our culture. It's not culturally acceptable to go over to someone's house and just take a shower out of nowhere. You have to either know them better or it has to be a special circumstance.
Isn't it weird that less weird to take a shower in someone's house than to take a shit in their house?
No, look.
It's more acceptable to take a shit in a stranger's house.
Let's say you were, you taught like.
It's hospitality.
Wait a second. Let's say you taught like private piano lessons at your house and you're always having parents and students coming in and out.
Oh, that's definitely
weird. If they were to take a shower, that would be weird. But yes. I'm saying in this new cult, this other culture, since there's no half baths, there's only bathrooms with showers, people would feel compelled to take more showers. And so it would be common practice for the parent to take a shower while their kid's having their lesson.
Future,
not in the bathroom in the back. I'm talking about the bathroom right by the front door.
Right, because like when you go outside, it's so filthy and like terrible and slimy.
Maybe that's what would
happen. You have to like take a shower.
Maybe that would be a prerequisite to necessitate this feature, is that we'd live in a really slimy world.
Extra slimy.
Our world is extra slimy all the time.
All right. Speaking of extra slimy worlds.
I'm not joking, Lee.
We'll get back to Nazi planet here.
Oh, boy.
Nazi.
Yes, exactly. I was trying to get, I know we've referenced it, but I would like to directly address the fact that William Shatner has a hilarious pronunciation of the word Nazi.
Nazi.
That's his deal, man.
Sabotage.
Nazi. It's peculiar, because I don't even think it's a Canadian pronunciation of Nazi.
It's
weird.
Maybe he started with one, and then he just made it all weird.
Why Nazi Germany?
Why Nazi?
Nazi. Why Nazi Germany?
It's even, play that again in a second, Dan, but I want you to listen to, it's actually awkward for him to say this because of the vowel change, the way he says why and Germany, the vowel change, he contorts his mouth in order to squeeze that Nazi into the middle of those two sort of syllabic constructions.
Why Nazi Germany?
Hologram?
I did enjoy.
What kind of monsters are the Zeons sending against us?
I like that line.
It's a musical line.
What kind of monsters?
But when Kirk says, when Kirk asks Spock, he's like, "Do you recognize the uniforms?" And Spock is all like, "Yes, blah blah blah, mid-century Earth," and he's like, "Nazi Germany, the nation state of Nazi Germany," in order to differentiate from the at the time like not Nazi Germans, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah.
Right.
So, do you have any other points to make, you guys?
I have all sorts of fucking points.
Holy fuck.
I thought you were like being silent because it was my turn to make. Okay, wait, let's talk about.
We were giving you an opportunity to talk.
Let's talk about when they were in the jail cell and they did that weird shit with the metal cot when they took the metal cot apart.
Sliced open their arms.
Was that what was going on? Is Kirk was slicing open
bits,
Spock's. Did you notice if you look at it.
Spock sliced open his arm.
If you look at the cot. The part that Kirk ripped off, the little slat part thing, it was darker. The screws were like really dark around the edges. So I don't know if that had to do with but if you notice that it came off so easily.
I don't know what it had to do with.
It was a prop.
It came off, but it was darker around
it was a
that
prop
spot.
Cut.
Maybe it was like in those Hanna-Barbera cartoons when they're running around and you know what the moving part's going to be on the scene because it's the background, but it's the discolored part of the background means it's like a door or a bush that's going to move or something because it's
precisely
It's a cell. So. So right, and so he pulled that up, and I couldn't tell what was going on. I guess so he took this like tetanus ass like fucking like metal thing and cut them open. But it was hard to, I assume they were cutting them open, but it was so hard to tell because they did such a poor job illustrating
well,
that.
Well, they covered it up because they did not have obviously the budget to actually.
And it was mostly like the other guy being like, what are you doing? Are you trying to kill each other?
The guy was just like, for the whole time, he's like, who are you? What are you doing? Where'd you come from? What are you doing? What are you trying to kill yourselves?
Yeah. So you get a nasty infection for that. They said it was 27.
Get a Nazi infection.
And then he was talking about something. A Nazi infection.
Nazi.
Yeah, you made Dan self-interrupt. It's great.
There was something about millimeter. Okay, yeah. We must hold the crystals rigidly at a specific millimeters? Distance, which I believe should be 27.2 millimeters. From what? I couldn't understand what they were doing. Somehow he pulled out the implant, put it like up next to the light bulb in a weird way, and it caused a laser beam to come out. Like they invented some shit out of that.
Yeah.
They didn't even try to describe it with reversing polarities or anything. They were just like, if I put up this communicating device up to a laser, or up to a light bulb or whatever, it's gonna create a laser beam. It was so crazy. It wasn't even like MacGyver shit. Because MacGyver shit is like he finds some cool shit and puts it together. They're just like, I cast a magic
spell.
And
Kirk's all like, oh my goodness.
I found the magic crystal and I put it next to the blip blop light bulb to create a zip zap laser.
I found it perfectly reasonable.
I didn't find it reasonable at all, but it was interesting, and it didn't bother me.
All right.
I found it quite
unreasonable.
And what
was the deal with like Bones and like trying to get his boots on? Like,
that was hilarious.
Which what?
When Bones couldn't get his
he shows
Nazi
up and
boots on.
He's got part of his uniform on and he can't get his boots on.
He was being
on,
all persnickety
like,
about it. He's like, I can't, this doesn't fit right.
Then he gets a shoe on and he looks around and he's like, what the fuck is this?
It's like, okay, I guess he makes the worst Nazi.
I was like, I was surprised.
We have no time for emotionalism.
In a 1966, 1967, I suppose, television program that they would let McCoy sit there and say, what the fuck is this? Because that's what I heard.
What in blazes is this?
Yeah. See, he said, what the fuck is this?
The girl is drunk. Is a little too much to drink?
That's so silly. I really like the line when they were first captured and being flogged. I like the line, let their pain argue with them. I don't
remember that line.
Oh, yeah. That's the guy who ends up being a good guy, right? Turns out.
Oh, you mean Enig?
Is that his name?
He's hold him for an hour.
Oh, yeah, locked him up, let their pain argue with them. Then I should have gotten that
That's
one.
A cool line.
I can't believe I missed that one.
It's a sinister line.
Oh, man, I should go back and just get it just so I have it.
Yeah, you want
I can't
us to
believe
pause
I missed
the podcast?
Yes.
I lied before. We do have the capacity to pause the podcast.
Pause the podcast.
Shit.
Pause the podcast.
What in blazes is this? Do not joke with me, Zeon Pig.
I'm not joking, Lee.
I'm not joking, Lee.
I like the line when Kirk has Spock on his back. Spock's all climbed up on him, and Kirk is all like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, he's, oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
He goes,
that's when the laser comes out.
God darn it. I have it.
Gall darn it, Dan. What are you doing
here? Oh, why can't
you're the sound
I...
man.
Gall darn it.
I just can't find.
Do we need to buy you a bigger tablet?
I think we need to buy me a bigger brain.
Brainlet.
You want a little brainlet that we stick to the side?
I don't know.
Spare brainlet.
I don't know.
Side brain.
Are you having one of those episodes where you can't, where letters look like hieroglyphics to you? Because your doctor said we're supposed to call him if that happens.
Wow, it looks like I can't find the line that I'm looking for. What? That's fucking crazy.
Well, you can keep looking for it. We talked about how Professor Gill, John Gill's idea.
Oh, wait, here it goes. Okay.
I knew that would
this
happen.
This was, yeah, as soon as you start the, I know, sorry.
It's that classic gag, it works every time.
When Spock was on Kirk's back, was it this line you were talking about?
I don't care if you hit the broadside of a barn, doesn't hurt.
Yeah, that was one of them. All of those lines.
Yeah.
They'll pay.
Wait, there was another, there was one more Nazi line. There was like
say what to now?
This one, he sort of matter-of-factly says it at the end.
The problem with the Nazis wasn't simply that their leaders were evil, psychotic men. They were. But the main problem, I think, was the leader principle.
I just like the way he begins the sentence. He's like, you know what? You know the problem with these Nazis?
Yeah, yeah.
He also says Nazis.
Nazis. Nazis.
Yeah. Anyway.
Nazi guys.
Okay, you can continue with what you were saying now.
I was...
Sabotage.
I was merely going to pose the question, given that the plot of this episode was critiquing Nazis, mm-hmm. the Nazi philosophy, Nazi social organization. But you could do the same plot with other social organizations as well. This was probably the best one or the most interesting one. But what about feudalism?
Yeah, man.
Or like Soviet style communism was another one they could have reasonably done around this time. Constitutional monarchy. Sort of technocratic, whatever. Technocratic. Supercratic. Supernautic.
Technocratic.
Technocratic. I think I'd be into seeing, like a Star Trek, like a TOS episode, like, but critiquing like feudalism or something like that. It might not make for as interesting an episode because the Nazis Theocracy. Are just so, the no. Nazis are both fun to
those fun Nazis.
Sorry. Okay. That's one of those things where
so fun.
Don't pause the episode right there because it makes me sound bad.
They're so fun.
I was going to say they're fun to critique. They're fun to
fun to have on TV.
Humiliate.
Where would TV be without the fucking Nazis?
And they're a shortcut, right? Because within the symbol of that crooked cross, the swastika, in an instant, it symbolizes a huge spectrum of evil, bad behavior, warlikeness, industrialized terror, all sorts of things all wrapped into one. It's very easy.
Yeah.
And it's a little harder to do that. Even a hammer and sickle is more of a nuanced reaction.
This is one of those things that I'm going to be like, did you know? And it's like a lot of people know this, but like the first, one of the dungeons in the original Legend of Zelda, the dungeon had that similar shape, but it wasn't a swastika. It was like the old, it's like an old symbol for luck or something.
Oh,
like
it's
that.
A very common symbol, or actually around the world.
It's like
prominent in many Eastern
Sanskrit,
many Eastern cultures, but not only the variations on that sort of spiral. You know.
But it's not the same. The swastika is specifically like crooked or something.
Yeah, they do it crooked and they do it reversed and stuff.
Yeah,
but
it still looks this like very similar.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, a D though. We know the difference between a D and a B, a lowercase D and a lowercase B, and they're just reversed.
A duck.
And they go whole. There's a whole world of difference that gets conjured to your brain when you think of D versus B. I think of
what
my.
About D's?
I think I like to look at D, and
you
I like to
look at D's?
I like to finger my B. See,
see, Jesse, why does he get to say shit like that? It is not quote unquote crossing the line.
I know, right?
He just referred to quote unquote fingering his.
But
B.
His lines still haven't been crossed.
It's just a natural function of you know. It's not like,
and there's nothing unnatural about running your fingers through Leonard Nimoy's bushy,
what you call
luscious,
the witch,
his oily,
it's
luscious.
The words you use,
chest hair.
It's like I've told you, like smear. Smear is a gross word because it conjures up the image of smearing poop on toast. Like taking poop.
Why
from
can't
a,
it be
like
dipping, smearing mayonnaise or
no,
mustard?
No, it's like you
on
take
toast.
A knife and you get a bunch of poop on a knife
not
and you smear
fault
it on
that
toast.
You have like weird images in your head.
That's just what it conjures. I didn't make that up.
I'm not kink shaming you.
It's not a kink. It's not a kink. I don't like thinking about that. I wish I could use the word smear normally, but I can't. Okay? So it's not my choice. It's just what, it's just
right,
those things that happen.
Right,
like the word,
fair point,
like a lot of people don't like the word moist, understandably.
Yeah.
I'm cool with moist.
I like moist too. I like the associations it has.
I like it when things are
with
moist.
With like cake. And some other things too.
Well,
especially
never,
cake.
I
like
never
a moist
said
cake.
I never said that I cared about the word moist, but I understand
I know,
that
I
some
know.
People are.
Yeah.
And I understand why.
Yeah. Lots of people are all sorts of things, and that's cool.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
We'll figure out a way to live in society together. It's more fun when people are coming from different perspectives.
So Doris, the pseudo-Nazi, actually, who was the undercover person, pseudo-Nazi. She had to deal with some... So Kirk says to her, he says, I don't understand what's going on here. This goes against every principle that John Gill ever believed in. Our only chance is to see him quickly. And she goes, he makes a speech tonight from the chancellery. All the top party officials will be there. And Kirk goes, will you be there? And then he put his hand on her shoulder when he said that. He sounded like he was...
Well,
but then,
he's a bit of a creep.
Well, then later... Kirk is calling for Bones to be put in a uniform. He's like, make Bones, send him down. And he's like, send him down naked.
Make him a colonel.
Send him down naked if you have to.
That goes. But then they cut to Isak going up to Doris, grabbing her arm and whispering into the side of her head and then pulling her off. It seems like she has to keep putting up with men laying their hands all over her in this episode.
In that second instance, though.
That's what happens in the Nazi shit, man.
I did not interpret that as.
I didn't interpret it as sexual, no.
No. Not whispering into her head that he was mimicking that he and she were going to go make out. That was what he was trying to do to get past the guard. You see, to surreptitiously be like, the reason we're leaving the room is because we're gonna canoodle.
Oh, so he was trying to make it obvious.
They showed him walking past the guy, the guard guy, and the guard guy looked kind of bemused because
he's gonna get some.
He's like, I don't have to be suspicious of these two
because they're just gonna do it.
We got so many Xehans, we gotta take.
Why wouldn't you go to the closet and canoodle?
Well, okay.
And then they go to the closet, and there's just all these people hanging out in the closet.
Either way, she's got to have like men putting their hands all over the whole episode. Yeah, either way, it's like even though it was done on purpose as part of the plan, it still involved her being a position where someone had to like drag her around.
It was the 60s.
You know? Both in the context of the period of the show, even though it was an alien planet, the Nazi.
Well, they were humanoid, so they had the same architecture.
And because they have the same architecture, they have the same social organization, which is a patriarchal, paternalistic nightmare of a social organization.
I hope not.
Unfortunately.
And speaking of being inconspicuous, while Gil was giving his speech, Kirk's like, watch his mouth. That was, you know, with the microphone thing. And then Gil's continued to speak. Spock goes, Captain, the speech follows no logical pattern. You know, Spock, like, they're in the middle of a fucking room. Spock should probably refrain from referring to Kirk as Captain.
It's a running joke, though, that Spock has a trouble not referring to Captain.
Even though they're surrounded, they're going undercover surrounded by Nazis. He's still like, hey, Captain.
In City on the Edge of Forever, he kept calling Captain Kirk Captain to the point that Edith Keeler makes a point of calling it out.
Where would I stay?
Cap.
Cam.
Cap.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
You don't get it.
I don't get it.
There wasn't any religion involved. It was just like...
No, they made a point not to have any religion involved, and I think that was to emphasize the fact that it was about the social organization and that they didn't want to muddy the waters with religious aspects. They kept it purely it wasn't even racial necessarily.
They kept it pure? Did you say they kept it pure?
They kept it pure.
Yikes.
It was the Nazis. They know how to keep it pure. Pure stupidity.
Yeah.
I was going to say in the cave that you were so displeased with, Dan.
I wasn't like amazingly displeased. I just thought it was kind of dull.
Wait a second.
No, actually, I'm thinking. What cave?
The underground hidden office of the resistance or whatever these people were
called. They call it a mine.
Oh, I didn't like recording sound for it because it was hard.
I hated the scenes in the cave.
Yeah, I hated it. No, I thought you were talking about something else entirely.
No.
The dull look of a trapped animal.
They get quote-unquote arrested. It was that whole subterfuge they had where they, you know, they do the whole... There's a lot of subterfuge.
Some hilarious Nazi stuff.
A lot of subterfuge in this episode. Lots of pretending to be Nazis and not being Nazis and all this other stuff.
Some classic Hollywood hijinks.
They're in there and they're doing the whole fake being arrested thing. And there's a guy in the background who has like a 70s mustache, but like a few years too early. It's like he time traveled from the 70s to 1967. Cause it's like this like super curvy mustache.
Yeah.
And his hair was just super weird. It was a bizarre, I don't know.
For real.
Made me very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy the classic fake documentary crew gambit.
Yeah.
That was so strange.
That was really weird. Like I said, they were a bunch of clowns. Like, you know.
And all, as you alluded to earlier, Dan, all their equipment was Nazi branded. Mm-hmm. They had a swastika on the camera, on the lights, on the microphone. Everything had a fucking swastika on it. It was hilarious.
Isn't that how it was?
No, I don't think everything had a fucking swastika on it. I don't think you like went to the store and it was like, here's the swastika
it's
milk.
It's like when you go to here's Britain and everything has a Union Jack on it.
Well, yeah.
No,
I mean,
just kidding.
Maybe
that's not how it is.
With Gil, so Spock did some kind of mind meld on him, but then he did. Yeah. Then they had a super like beyond normal mind meld plot device. They made it so somehow Gil couldn't initiate speech or action, but he could respond to questions. Yeah. So Vulcans have these magical powers; they can just do anything to fix the direction.
That
of the
was
plot.
The one thing where look, I've commented often that as much as I enjoy modern Trek, and I do.
I do miss the
slower, less sort of crazily edited and fast paced sort of cinematography and editing and storyline, all that other stuff of particularly TNG, DS9, Voyager, that era, but also TOS, which is even more deliberate in its pacing. However, yes, sometimes on TOS you'll have a series of scenes, and this is one of them where it's like, first McCoy has to give him two injections. Still doesn't work. Then Spock has to give him some sort of special mind meld, as Dan said. And then after that, then Kirk gives him an injection. You know, so it's like, in a modern show, yeah, you wouldn't have all that. Just give him the injection and he'll wake up. They'd pick one of those things, right, and it would have simply worked to the point that they needed it to work.
I like that. Like, even though they introduced Melikon at the end and kind of out of nowhere, and I guess, like, there was, like, of course, the direness of the whole, you know, Nazi concept in general, but, like, most of the violence and stuff was pretty corny. Like, the lashings look corny, and, like, the...
Did you say horny?
Corny.
Corny.
The lashings
look
corny. Are you sure
it wasn't horny?
Sounded like
the lashing looked corny, and on top of that, and on top of the lashings looking corny,
horny.
Oh my god, dude!
Before the podcast started, we were listening to that that song. Is it just the song is called "Horny," right?
Okay,
it's like, I'm horny, I'm horny, horny, like horny.
The lashings looked corny. Jesus fuck, dude. And then there was like the chops and the neck pinches looked like that too. And then, but then at the end, like when Melikon like guns that whole fucking office down or whatever, he pulls out a rifle and he guns the shit out of everything. Once again, back to Star Trek always looks extra violent whenever they have some kind of like gun, because it's so out of place in Star Trek. And suddenly he's like shooting everyone down and then he
got shot and made a crazy face.
Yeah, he did. He was like, ooh, ooh. He was like, ooh. It was like he said,
you,
ooh, you. But even though like by like a normal action movie, it's really tame, in Star Trek, it looks super violent. I just realized something that we don't have. This is our third break, right?
Hmm? Yeah, we're almost
Did I play the same comeback sounds for the third one as I did for the second one?
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
What did I play for the second one?
I think I would have noticed.
I don't remember which one I played for the second one coming back then.
What did you think you were going to play?
So you want me to play them?
Not necessarily, but I think that's probably going to happen.
I think this is the last one I played coming back from break. I did this.
All right, pigs. On your feet, pig.
What did I play before that?
I don't remember.
Because the first one, I did something entirely different. I did the one where I was doing this.
Insert the transponder.
And I was going
like, bottom maximum orbit.
That was the first one. What did I do in the middle?
You mean coming back from the first break?
Well, so the first one,
coming back from the second
first
break?
One I played like.
This is the time of destiny.
Bottom maximum orbit.
Prepare a subcutaneous transponder in the event.
Insert the transponder.
That was the beginning. And then coming back after the first break, I played something I don't remember. Then coming back for the third break, I played.
All right, pigs, on your feet, pig.
What about going to the third break?
I have a different section for going to than I do from coming from. Good enough. And so I don't remember what the second one I played, because this is what I was supposed to end. This is what coming back to the third break was supposed to be, this one.
You look quite well for a man who's been utterly destroyed.
And it's too bad
you did not play that.
I didn't play that. So what did I play in this coming back from the first break? This is my question.
I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
It's gone. It's gone from my head.
Yeah, but it's in the podcast.
We have to listen.
I know.
To
we have to. I know it's there. I'm glad there's the evidence.
Well, on Monday you
I'm
can
glad,
listen to the podcast.
I'm glad there's
evidence.
On Monday, I gotta
on
wait.
Monday,
I gotta wait till Monday, like all the other schlubs.
Yeah, like the rest of the goddamn rubes out there.
Yeah. No, I'm really like, it's freaking me out that I don't remember it, and it sucks that I didn't get to play this.
You look quite well for a man who's been utterly destroyed.
Because that would have been fun to come back with.
Yeah, but you've played it twice now.
I know, but I'm saying I didn't get to play it when it was supposed to be played. It loses its effect.
Man,
you're
making Jesse lunch out here, man.
He's lunching. No, it loses its effect if you don't play it.
This guy's lunching out like a Bama.
You lose the effect if you don't get to play it in the proper time in which was intended.
Sandwiches.
Because
what the fuck is that, Dan?
Neck bone!
Neck bone.
Because imagine how much funnier it would have been if we were like, we're back, and then I went.
You look quite well for a man who's been utterly destroyed.
Because then you guys would have been, haha, you're right, it's been a long podcast. I'm so tired. You know?
I mean, it has been a long podcast. So
and you would have been funnier.
I get the impression we've concluded all our points about patterns of force, and we are at the end of our time here. Last chances.
There was not a that's an order. But there was, Enig goes, finished, what have you learned? Hold them for an hour. And then the Major goes, Excellency, the order. And then Enig goes, that is my order, Major. I suggest you do not disobey it. Mm-hmm. It's not that that's an order. It was fine.
It was good.
So I'm just sort of devolved this into anytime someone sort of like throws an order out, how they present their order.
And again, an explanation.
Because I don't know.
For any new users, Dan does
new
not...
New users?
No users. I forgot. Sometimes I go back to my system operator days from the old mm-hmm. BBS days when we were young and fresh, Dan. But both Dan and I ran independent
Dan
BBS.
And I
mean,
they talk like this.
Yeah, we were like, hey, do you want to join sign up for our BBS? You can play Trade Wars and Lord, and if you pay us money, we'll give you extra turns.
I like Usurper. That was a fun game.
Usurper was awesome. Anyway,
but Lord was more streamlined. But Usurper was
Yeah.
Legend of the Red Dragon is Lord.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not talking BBSs. That's our separate podcast called It's Got BBSs.
Yep.
Coming next week.
Bring your own BBS.
What's his name?
Leonard Nimoy.
No.
DeForest
Kelly plays a good drunk.
Oh,
I thought he did a good job playing. He was swaying
back and forth.
Yeah, because he wasn't all being like, I'm a drunk, like, he looked like he was like
and
fucking
as we,
drunk.
As we saw in the animated series, he also plays a good person dreaming of owning a plantation.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's,
anyway.
That's true.
That's not even there.
You can't help himself.
Did we decide that John, because they were asking if John Gill was, he was like, is he acting? Does he have psychosis? Is he drugged? Did we ever find out specifically, was he drugged?
Yeah, he was drugged. Both McCoy and John Gill himself confirmed he was drugged.
He was drugged.
Yeah. And Gill, you probably didn't record it, but Gill's all like, the drugs.
Drugs.
No. Oh, I just wanted to mention also when Isak they get back into the cave, mm-hmm. the cave place, and his friend David or whatever, and Abram, which is Isaac's brother.
Names sound very familiar.
Yeah. One of them comes in and they're like, Uletta's dead. And Uletta's like, Isak's like, you know, love of his life and everything. And then that would have been enough information. But then they go on to say she was shot down and lived for 5 hours and he walked past her and spat on her.
Because it's
like, why would he tell him that?
Well, he's illustrating how horrible these
people
are.
I know, but like, he doesn't. That was his fucking love of his life. I think telling him she's dead is enough. He doesn't need all the details.
But he was trying to tell the audience.
I know.
But nobody really needs to hear that.
But my point is an excuse.
It was not the most clunky exposition. The most clunky exposition came immediately after that when what's his name was like, she was to be my wife.
Right.
Because that's the only way we know why we would care about this person.
Obviously, it was to tell the audience. I'm just saying, it was. It could have been a little smoother. I was saying it could have been smooth. Right. You're interrupting me.
It's because it's the
stop
end of
interrupting
the podcast.
Me. Well, I was just saying. Right. I was just saying it could have been a little smoother.
Okay.
Agreed. Okay. Right. Now you can talk.
Is there duty or no duty?
There's no duties or no duties.
There's no duties.
That's the end of the podcast.
There's no duties or no duties.
Next week, we will be discussing...
As
we mentioned earlier, we will be discussing Acquisition from Star Trek Enterprise. That's going to be a fun one. We thought we've done enough fascists and Nazis for a bit, so let's do something a little goofy and fun. And we were due an Enterprise episode. So tune in next week for that. Send us your questions or questions or comments at feedback@discussstartrek.com.
Do you wish to speak now?
If you want to speak out loud, go to itsgotstartrek.com/record to send us a voicemail or just send us an MP3. That'd be fun.
You've got to talk.
On all the old social medias, Blue Sky, Threads, all that business.
Blueski!
Are at symbol, It's Got Star Trek. Don't forget to check my guest appearance out on TrekCast. It was episode 4 something or other, recently, within the last week. Just check them out in general. Just watch all of the TrekCast videos until you find mine.
For so long, I've prayed for this.
It's in the 400s. And what else? Patreon.com/ItScottStarTrek.
That is my order, Major.
And YouTube and Facebook and Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
I thought you were going to say Apple Pie. What if there was an Apple Pie cast?
That would be delicious.
I know. I know.
It's got to be an Apple Pie cast. Anyway.
Apple Pie cast.
Caramel sauce.
That's enough Nazis for a little bit.
Nazi Germany?
Too many Nazis in real life, so...
Nazi.
Let's take it easy.
Let's take it easy for a little bit. So next week, Acquisition, Ferengi party. Archer and Trip meet some Ferengi.
Ferengi party.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Goodbye.
Ferengi got finger.
It is time to stop the bloodshed, to bury our dead. Kirk out.
As I recall from the history of physics, the ancient... lasers were able to achieve the necessary excitation even using crude natural crystals.
Oh, Mr. Spark, the guard did a very professional job on my back. I'd appreciate it if you'd hurry.
Yes, of course, Skip. You realize that the aim will, of course, be very crude.
I Don't care if you hit the broadside of a barn. Just hurry, please.
Captain, why should I aim at such a structure?
Never mind, Spock. Just get on with the job.